there are many places in Afghanistan where we cannot go because of the security reasons.
We have a general idea of what the technical quality of care is like. But if you don't engage the communities, you're not going to actually increase the utilization.
Personally, I think that where I may die is ordained. It might happen in Afghanistan, or it might happen in Ghana.
Welcome to FHS Podcasts. Hi there. I'm Jeff Knezovich, and I'm the Policy Influence and Research Uptake Manager for Future Health Systems, a research consortium working to improve access, affordability, and quality of health services for the poor. In our first podcast, we spoke with Professor David Peters from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health about complex adaptive systems. And one of the examples that we referred to was our work in Afghanistan. Quite a few listeners got in touch wanting to find out more about our work in Afghanistan. So I made the trek to what is a rather chilly Kabul, and I'm sitting here in my long johns with a nice cup of Nescafe, joined by the rest of the FHS team. And I'm ready to hear all about our work here. Why don't we start by having you introduce yourselves? Melissa?
My name is Melissa Roach. I have been in Afghanistan for a year and a half now. I did my MPH at Johns Hopkins University in the 2009-10 year and came to Afghanistan first, initially for a three-month internship, and I kind of got sucked into staying in a extended multiple times.
Just can't get enough?
Can't get enough. Very interesting work and projects going on here in Afghanistan right now.
Great. And Kojo?
I am Kojo Osei-Bonsu. I'm a postdoctoral research fellow with the Bloomberg School of Public Health, specifically the Department of International Health. I am a Ghanaian. I was trained as a physician, and then I proceeded to the Bloomberg School of Public Health, where I completed the MPH program as a summer scholar. I've been in the FHS2 program for about 6 months now. I am director, together with Melissa, and very soon, on Melissa's departure, I'll be working with Anubhav.
Well, then this would seem an appropriate time to introduce yourself, Anubhav.
My name is Anubhav, and I'm working with Indian Institute of Health Management Research. I'm a research officer there. And before coming to Afghanistan, I got trained in public health management and research from the same institute.
So, Kojo, first question, and you probably get this a lot, but what brought you to Afghanistan?
My conviction has always been that public health practice is more relevant in a developing country setting. So I wanted to go to a developing country to work on completion of the program. And then the director of my concentration, Dr. Ambrose Edward, mentioned to our group that there was this interesting project, the MetaSharp project, which is a monitoring and evaluation project of the health system of Afghanistan here, using the balanced scorecard, which is pretty much an innovation in the health sector, to assess performance of facilities. I thought it was an exciting project, innovative, and I wanted to be a part of it. And especially so in the case of Afghanistan, which is a country coming out of the throes of conflict for a number of decades. So I signed up, and I think within 2 weeks of being told about the project, I was ready to fly out of the U.S. to Afghanistan.
And so, Melissa, how did your friends and family react when you told them that you wanted to move to Afghanistan?
Most of my family doesn't travel too much. Most of them have never been out of southern United States. I'm already kind of the oddball. I lived in India for a couple of years. I've traveled to Nepal and West Africa and quite a few other places. And so they're a little bit used to me doing crazy things. I think Afghanistan was still a little bit beyond their expectations.
And so what did you tell them to convince them that it would all be okay?
I think they're still concerned. They didn't argue with the decision. They didn't like it. And I'm sure they're nice and worried and probably have ulcers due to me.
Wait, didn't Barry Marshall show that that was bacteria? What was it? Helicobacter pylori that caused ulcers.
So maybe not. Maybe I'm not responsible for those.
Yeah, you can always thank
Barry Marshall that you didn't give your parents ulcers by moving to Afghanistan. What about you, Anu? Similar reaction?
One of my close relatives, I told him that I'm going to Afghanistan. And he said, no, you are not going there. It's not. It's a violent place and risk of life and all those things. I said, okay, I'm not going to Afghanistan. Can I go to Kabul? He said, that's fine.
But I mean, I suppose you do raise a serious point in that. The security situation in Afghanistan isn't the same everywhere you are.
I think that the portrayal Afghanistan has had in the media of being a hostile country is true. And in all fairness, that is what is happening here. But I think that is also unfair to the ordinary Afghans who are living their daily lives and who are so nice to people from other countries who they see and interact. And the other thing I want to say that is that ordinary Afghans are paying something of a terrible price for what is going on. And, you know, 2 days ago, it was a senseless attack on ordinary Afghans. So I think that they're also paying a price for what is going on. But they're nice people in a beautiful country. And I do hope that someday they'll be able to enjoy their country.
I mean, you certainly raise an important issue there. You brought up the attack that happened on Ashura on Tuesday, where over 50 people were killed and hundreds injured. What's it like living day to day under the constant threat of attack, and how does that affect your research?
Try not to think about it most of the time. If you stress about it too terribly much, you will go crazy. But there's certain times when things are like worse, when an event like that happens in Kabul, sometimes you hear those things, like literally hear and feel the bomb blast and the stuff. And those are pretty stressful.
The first day I arrived here, I heard a bomb blast for the first time in my life. Within a week, there was a major attack on the Indian embassy, and it was quite a strong shockwave that passed our guest house as well. So I had some close encounters.
Sounds like a bit of an understatement.
We're all able to joke about it pretty well together and make fun of our own crazy security.
Every day, or at least every week, we get updates that something has happened in a town, a city, or a province. But for us, we take the precautions we need to take. We have a security personnel at our office who tells us that today you can go here or you cannot go here. You can go on this street and not on this other street. Stay away from gatherings. Stay away from these mosques. And generally take necessary precautions so that you do not get into harm's way. I think that for us, the biggest security concern is being collateral damage. It is somewhat unlikely that we'll be prime targets of anybody.
There is a place in the north called Mazar-e-Sharif where I was mistaken as a spy agent, and I was arrested on gunpoint. And the army person wasn't shy of saying me that you are lucky to be arrested, otherwise we usually shoot people in the head for those doing that. So I had some close encounters, but when you are coming to Afghanistan, you make a decision by choice. You're coming in a fragile environment, you know that there is a risk involved in the work.
Personally, I think that where I may die is ordained. It might happen in Afghanistan, or it might happen in Ghana. It might happen in my sleep, or it might happen in a car accident. So I don't think and dwell too much about it. I concentrate on the work and what I want to get out of it.
Okay, you mentioned the work, and I know that all of you were involved in several different projects. But I know that FHS is mainly involved in piloting a community scorecard to evaluate local health services. Tell me a little bit about that.
The community scorecard, essentially, is a way of empowering communities to have a greater say in the services they receive. It's been piloted in a number of countries in Africa, Malawi, Ghana, Rwanda, and then in India as well. Essentially, what it does is that we first go into a community, introduce the concept of the scorecard in what we call the first plenary meeting. At a plenary meeting, we meet with the care providers, we meet with members of the community, village leaders, members of the community council, both men and women. So essentially what we'll do with the scorecard is to have two separate groups. We'll have the providers on one hand and the care receivers on the other hand. would assist them in selecting indicators of service delivery. Is it punctuality of service providers at work? Is it their politeness? Is it the availability of drugs? So the communities will meet, have a discussion with us, select their indicators. The providers will also meet with us, select their indicators. Our role in this exercise will be a facilitatory one, in the sense that we will not be deciding the indicators for them. They will pick the indicators that they think are important for them. And beyond that, they will score these indicators. The scoring will be done on a scale of 0 to 100%, on a scale of 0 to 10. And we just tell them it's like how you score children in school are scored in tests. But we're telling them in the same breath that these are not tests. It's just a measure of performance. We are keen to ensure that we do not bring the service providers to a point where they are treated as children who are given marks and then ridiculed in the community or attacked by members of the community. So after these different groups have made their indicator selections and scored performance, we'll bring them together in what we call the interface meeting. Now, this is a meeting where you have two people with different opinions. It may be the case that they see things very differently, but the objective is to bring them together to a common objective and for them to work together. So it's important that the facilitation of this discussion is both wise, is restrained, and technically competent. And we are training people in these skills to do that. At the interface meeting, we'll ask why providers score themselves in a given manner and why the community score the providers in another manner. Then we'll work out an action plan that is mutually acceptable to these groups. And then beyond that, move on to implementing the action plan. The objective is that both members in the community and the service providers will be working together. So the members in the community will get an appreciation of what it is the service providers are facing in giving them care. And the service providers also begin to gauge and to have an understanding of what it is that the people they are serving expect from them. And we believe that this is a first step in improving quality. While they are working on the action plan, we as a team will be following up on how it is going. And then we'll have several iterations. We are looking at between 2 and 3 iterations of the first exercise, where we repeat the scoring by both parties, the interface meeting, and the plan of action and its follow-up. At the end of it, we'll go back into the community and ask them their general impression of the exercise and whether they think it has been useful. In the process, we'll also be gathering data about the discussions in the interface meetings, about the plan of action and the results it's produced, so that with all these pieces of information, we'll be able to tell if it is worthwhile scaling up the scorecard process.
Okay, but why is there such a focus on engaging with communities in this work? Why is that important?
Well, as of right now, Hopkins has been monitoring the quality of care based on the facility level. And so we have a general idea of what the technical quality of care is like. But if you don't engage the communities, you're not going to actually increase the utilization. And there might be other barriers besides things that we're monitoring through the MetaSharp project that might be stopping people from actually accessing the care. And so through the community scorecard, people are able to work to improve those things themselves. And they know better what they are than we do. We're coming in from the outside. They're part of the community. And some of these things can be solved within the community. So it's also empowering them to do that. And so that's exciting.
I mean, you say that there are some things that can be solved from within the community. I mean, a lot of the input indicators like access to drugs, I mean, maybe not. But so no. What might be some of the things that at a community level they can work on?
So say, for instance, the health provider has his own private practice on the side, and maybe he's not actually at the health facility at the times. Through the interface meeting and discussions, maybe the community can work, you know, on a solution and solve that. Or if
Is that common that they have facilities on the site?
That's very common from what we hear. And so that'll be interesting to see if that and absenteeism and stuff like that, if this has any impact on that sort of thing.
Interesting. Now, I imagine that you've had some challenges as you've been implementing this research. I note, for example, that you're not exactly piloting the project in Helmand and Kandahar. But what are some of the things that... Well, what are some of the challenges associated with actually doing research in Afghanistan?
There are many places in Afghanistan where we cannot go because of the security reasons. And we have to make replacements in our original sample, which adds an element of biasness because we are already doing those secure areas for the last few years. And insecure areas, they remain to be insecure or become even more insecure, and we are not able to go to those places.
Well, and you mentioned before that when you are out in the field, you've been mistaken for a government spy. That's not the first I've heard of that, because someone else was saying that the actual field workers who were going out to different clinics were not willing to take GPS devices so that to kind of tag the locations of the clinics because they were afraid that they would be perceived as government agents.
There was a combination of factors which merged together for that incident to take place. I was carrying the GPS device. It was very hot, and I was tying a handkerchief across my face. And people later on reported that the way you were tying the handkerchief, Afghans do not do that. In addition to that, they had some intelligence input that somebody has infiltrated and they were already looking for it. So I provided them all the reasons to arrest me.
But I think another challenge of doing research in Afghanistan is the kind of questions you can ask based on the security situation. We had some questions in our instruments that we wanted to ask. And during some of our training sessions, our researchers who go out into the field told us that some of the questions were threatening. A particular example was questions asking whether homes had satellite phones. They told us that folks would suspect them of being government operatives if they asked that question. And even if those people had satellite phones, they would tell them they didn't, because they felt that if they did, they just might bring themselves to harm.
And so have you had to adapt the FHS study in any way to make it more relevant to the Afghan context?
The scorecard, I think the integral component is the interface meeting. And here you bring everybody together, men and women, to have a discussion on improving quality. But in Afghanistan, the situation is different. In a lot of communities, men and women do not sit together to have discussions. And it is one of the challenges we are facing in planning the way we are going to have our scorecard process done. When we get to the interface meeting, how are we going to have men and women possibly sit together? It just might be the case that we might not be able to get these two groups to sit together. But we hope that even while they are separated, we could bring their different discussions together.
And, well, the gender issue is certainly an important one in Afghanistan. I mean, Melissa, have you found that as a Western woman working here, that's posed any challenges?
I think it was Lonely Planet or something, and it called women, like foreign women in Afghanistan, like a third gender. And it kind of is true. We're kind of in between. I can talk to Afghan men and foreign men and women, and I can talk to Afghan women. And so if you are a foreign guy here, you might have a little more difficulty talking to both. And so we're somewhere in between.
And that's certainly an interesting place to be. Thank you all so much for spending the time to chat with me and explain a little bit about what FHS is up to in Afghanistan, working with the community scorecards to improve health services there, and for your reflections on what it's like actually living in Afghanistan on a daily basis. I wish you all the best of luck. And to our listeners, if you're interested in finding out more, You can always visit our website on www.futurehealthsystems.org. You can follow us on Twitter, you can like us on Facebook, and indeed, if you'd like to see some photos from my trip to Kabul, you can go ahead and check out our photo stream on Flickr. Thanks so much!